You're listening to NBC Sports Radio. Weekends. This is Speaking of Sports with Jim Daniels on NBC Sports Radio, where every day is game day. And now, it's Jim Daniels.
Thanks for making us a part of your day. We appreciate that at NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. This is Speaking of Sports. I'm Jim Daniels. Taking a maybe slightly different look at some of the stories and individuals that are making news in the sports world this morning. We're getting ready for another big week in the NFL. Pete Fox is in the update studio, and I want to bring you in a headline that I'm reading on our very own website, as a matter of fact, on NBCSports.com this morning. The headline reads, Greg Hardy feels like the world's against him. And another headline that I thought on here that was interesting is, the same thing about, it's basically two or three things, actually, about Greg Hardy feeling like that he finally now understands where the hate is coming from. And apparently this is all part of, you know, he had to sit down with a couple of his teammates. He's had several sit-downs with his head coach, Jason Garrett, who keeps calling in these, you know, faux pas, whether it's saying the wrong thing, I'm coming out with guns blazing in the media, or his little faux pas with Twitter a couple of days ago. I mean, a lot of these guys should stay away from Twitter entirely. But, you know, I'm surprised that he would even allow himself to come out and be portrayed as like, I don't understand what's going on. Do you? I mean, don't you think that this guy has been pretty calculated so far with his attorney and their moves and all of that? Don't you think surprise is kind of a surprising look for him?
No, he doesn't seem to be taking the high road. To me, no. He's making all the wrong moves, and it's kind of like if he were to just go away, so to speak, and just be quiet, play the game, some people might be willing to at least forget. I don't know if they're ever going to forgive, but forget what happened and kind of move on, especially in Dallas. But he keeps like igniting the fires and getting people riled up and, you know, screaming at the fans on the road when they're screaming at him. It's like, dude, just take the high road. And he just keeps making bad moves after bad moves. To me, he seems like a big time idiot.
It's so hard to get through to somebody like this because, you know, you're talking to, and you hear this a lot in the coaching ranks. Like a lot of coaches, like they keep talking about Calipari. He's in the news again about the Sacramento Kings want to go get John Calipari. If he's smart, he stays exactly where he is. He is the absolute king of his world. And you go, you're going to leave all of that for maybe a little bit more money to go play for a lousy team that has never been anything, that is going to really struggle to amount to be anything whatsoever, you know, considering where they are. Why would you put up with all of that headache? You know, because when you get to that level, you're dealing with completely different element. You're not talking about students. You're not talking about kids. You're talking about multi-millionaires, and in some cases, guys that you know, you couldn't reach. You know, if they were, you know, if they were sitting right in front of you, that's one of the tough things I think about coaching professional sports is trying to get through to guys like this that just absolutely tune you out. It's like, you know, I'm here and paid to do a very specific thing. That's break through the line of the defense, whatever team lines up on the other side of me, and sack the quarterback. The rest of this means nothing to me. He seems exactly like that guy.
Yeah, look, I'm a Kentucky fan, so I would hate to see him go anywhere because even though I'm not a huge fan of the one-and-done scenario, it feels like you said, he's the king of that world. He's figured out how to operate within those restrictions and is very successful at it. And, you know, he had, 3 years in New Jersey with the Nets, and that wasn't extremely successful. So for him to think about leaving, I agree. There's no reason for it. Sacramento is not a destination. It's probably, to me, Jim, this feels like one of those scenarios where Sacramento, much like with the Trojans, as they're on a coaching search right now, they're just throwing out names of people that they would love to have. They don't know whether those guys are interested. I feel the same way with the Sacramento Kings. Vivek Ranadive is probably just saying, hey, you know, what about Calipari? Calipari, they're not having a conversation. It's just him throwing out his wish list.
Yeah. Shifting to the college game for just a second, Ohio State it's a mild upset. It's not a gigantic upset because Michigan State is a good team. As a matter of fact, that You know, we expected a good contest between the two of them. I'm sure the Buckeyes didn't expect to come out on the short end in their home field, but Ezekiel Elliott after the game was just absolutely furious and was throwing everybody under the bus after the game was over with. Pretty disappointing to hear that out of somebody. Look, I know that you're disappointed. I know you're playing for a national championship, but, you know, but for a group that's just coming off of a national championship, you'd expect just maybe a little bit more maturity.
Well, I would disagree a little bit that it wasn't a big upset. I think it was because just look at the spread. The spread was over 14 points, I believe. I know it started at 14.5. I don't know exactly where it finished. But from that perspective, it was in Columbus. And, you know, you give a little bit more weight to the home team because of that, because of their winning streak, so forth and so on. But I agree with you. Generally, when teams win, they always credit the coaching staff, but you don't see it the other way around. You don't see the players going, "We lost because of the coaches," at least at this level. It's very, very rare that you'll see a college football player throw his coaching staff under the bus and say, "They didn't give us the opportunity. They didn't put us in the right positions to win this game." Generally, it's the tip of the cap. That's a good team over there. None of that from Ezekiel Elliott last night. He was like, "I'm out of here. I'm heading to the next level."
Yeah, there's no way I'm coming back. I think were some of the words that he used. And he's, you know, probably going to be followed by a couple of other guys too. But, you know, just it's too bad that it's got to go down that way. And again, the expectations in the world of sports anymore. Urban Meyer had won, you know, was it 30 in a row? 30 games in a row. You know, he had his own streak going on top of the team streak. It's just the expectations. We talked last week, and I think about Les Miles, and maybe you should be talking about that today too, because they were saying he was playing for his job yesterday. Well, if that's the case, I would imagine he's gone, wouldn't you? If that's what I mean, because they were saying all week long, he's playing for his job here. Yeah, we're thinking about making a change. And then you go out and, I mean, that's laying an egg. I mean, they were not competitive in that game.
Yeah, it did come up a lot. I heard that comment quite a bit. Is Les Miles playing for his job? You know, his record is very, very positive. It's very, very good for LSU over his tenure there. I would be surprised if they fired him. Maybe next year, but or after a playoff, or I'm sorry, after a bowl game, if they were to lose that, but not right at this point. It doesn't seem like it would be the right call for them. But you never know. People get the itchy trigger finger, just like they did in Houston with the Rockets. But I go back to this Ohio State loss to Michigan State and the recency bias, because there are 2 1-loss teams in the top four. And wouldn't you consider a loss to Michigan State, a top 10 team, a quality loss?
Yeah.
And why would that kick them out of the? Look, I'm no Ohio State fan. I'm not lobbying for them.
Right.
Why would that kick them out of the top four when Alabama has a loss and so does Notre Dame?
And, you know, Notre Dame is the darling. You know, the committee loves Notre Dame. There's all this talk about that. And I think there's a great shot if they keep going that they're going to wind up in there. Les Miles, though, by the way, 138-53.
Pretty good.
That's a 723 winning percentage. So my question is, if you let that guy go, you're going to get who to replace him?
Yeah. Yeah, you could understand it maybe if you feel like he's lost them, but he's perfect at the college level. That's one of those guys that you don't necessarily think would translate to the professional level. He's that type of guy. He fits in that environment, and for them to make a move, yeah, if not him, then who?
Yeah, the other staggering thing is the amount of money that it would cost, too. And that's $15 million to let him go, but he's got $3 million worth of assistant cash that's guaranteed as well. So he goes, his guys go, everybody gets paid. That means you throw $18 million out the window and then go make a deal with somebody else for even more? Wow. Got an awful lot of money to spend down there in that football program at LSU, huh?
Down the bayou, we make our own money down here.
Hey, are you any kind of a NASCAR fan whatsoever?
No.
I'm really not either, but I know that Jeff Gordon is from Southern California. His name comes up a lot. I know he's a very polar figure in the NASCAR world that people that are our fans. Like Art Martinez used to be the a technical director on this show.
Yeah.
Artie is a little bit of a NASCAR fan too, and he hates that guy. And I'm like, what do you hate him for? That's where I was going to go. This guy has sure got his fair share of haters out there, and all he's done is win.
I think it's because he's from Southern California, quite honestly. He's not a blue blood, if you will. And that most of the NASCAR fans are. And consequently, Jeff Gordon doesn't get that tip of the cap. But, you know, Jimmy Johnson's from San Diego, but he,
right.
exactly. he doesn't anger people the same way. So I don't understand.
And
that.
Really, these guys are about an hour apart from each other, right?
Yeah.
From where Jimmy Johnson is and where he – anyway, you got the you've got a huge race going on in NASCAR today. If you are a NASCAR fan, you know all about it and you're paying attention today. They're down in Florida, down in Homestead, and they're going to do their thing on NBC. That's a little bit later on today if you want to catch that. It's 3 to 7 p.m. Eastern on NBC. It's the Ford EcoBoost 400 from Homestead, Florida. All right, Pete Fox, thanks very much. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Check in with you. I got a couple of beauties for you at the end of the this program for you too. So
Alrighty.
Buckle up and get ready for that. Up next, we'll dial up the professor Rick Horro, talks the business of sports with us on Speaking of Sports every weekend. We'll do that next. It's NBC Sports Radio and NBC Sports Radio's mobile app. Thanks for choosing NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. This is Speaking of Sports. I'm Jim Daniels. Thanks for being with us. We certainly appreciate you being along for our Sunday morning ride. Visit your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store during the See Better, Drive Safer sale and get the best deals on everything that you need to improve visibility and to be prepared for this fall's weather. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices. That's every day. Let's dial up the phone and get the professor now, the business of sports, deal making, marketing, fun stuff like that. Rick Horro joins us now. I guess the question I got to ask every week, where in the world is Rick Horro?
South Florida pentathlon, ladies and gentlemen. So yesterday, University of Miami, a terrible lightning delay game at Sun Life Stadium. Then watching the Heat almost blow it against the previously winless Sixers. Driving down to a rain-soaked Sun Life again to watch the Cowboys slog it out with the Dolphins. The last 100 laps of Homestead, assuming it runs. And then tomorrow night, the Panthers and Kings. 5 games, 3 days, a lot of money. Some camaraderie, all reporting for you. You'll be getting the invoice.
Boy, this guy is on the Learjet all the time. I want to talk color first, actually color controversy. The NFL and Nike have this really bright, colorful relationship called Color Rush. Now, there's been a lot of talk about this. Phil Simms, I think, was the first comment I heard from a broadcaster saying those uniforms are giving me a headache. And when they did the color rush with the Bills and the Jets, you had red-green out there. And people that are red-green colorblind called up and tweeted and wrote in to complain that they couldn't tell who was who out there. Are we going to see more of this color rush?
Well, the first thing I can tell you as a Miami Dolphins fan heading down to the game is that the Jets and the Bills are combined 3-0 against the Dolphins, so it didn't really matter who was playing where and what. We have no reason to talk today. Listen, the bottom line of all of it, though, is that Nike, Adidas, everybody continued to experiment with their retail deals with respective leagues. 5 or 6 different kind of uniforms for each team. This is just another variation of that. You might not have liked those uniforms. When I was at that game Thursday night, I thought there was something weird about it, but they were kind of cool. I don't care if you like them or don't. The point is, if you're colorblind, you really don't like them. But experiments are made to work and not work, and I don't mind them not working as long as they improve on them. And they have gone the other direction. I don't know if we saw Thursday night's game with those mustard yellow Jaguars uniforms from this week. That's the same color rush family. You hope that they continue to tweak it, a little bit better, you know?
You know, it's easy for people to complain about that stuff and say they don't like that stuff. I'm gonna come out on the same side as you. I like it. I think it's fun. And I'll even add this: I am red green colorblind. It did look funny to me, but come on, you're really reaching if you're complaining about that. I can absolutely tell the difference between the two. So,
actually, did you watch the game? Could you tell offense versus defense?
Yes, absolutely. The guys with the ball, right?
Yeah, very well done. Plus, you have more brain cells than most.
See,
so,
that's right. I haven't killed them all yet. Pepsi's Uncle Drew campaign is back, and I am excited. This is some really fun stuff. Cleveland Cavaliers guard Kyrie Irving teamed up with Pepsi, and this is a couple of years ago, to do the Uncle Drew ads. You had Kevin Love in one of them, but apparently there's a fourth installment coming up. Who are they adding to the mix in the Uncle Drew campaign?
Well, you know, you got a lot of other guys, too. Maybe we keep it a little bit of a surprise. You know, his nemesis, Walt.
Walt.
Walt. Yeah, Walt. But listen, here's the bigger picture issue. You watch it, you enjoy it, you like it. Athletes being human is very important for their scores. If you just want to put it in, how do you make more money? You don't think so. How about Tony Romo and Peyton Manning in those DirecTV commercials with the other Peyton Manning and the other Tony Romo?
Right.
So I guess the bottom line of all of this, JD, is that people realize that these commercials have to stand out of the pack, and one of the ways you do it is to have athletes poking fun at themselves. And in these days of gross over-empowerment, how's that for a statement? You want to have athletes that feel like they can poke fun at themselves, and this is exactly that.
And it's fun stuff, too. I mean, the last couple of them that I've seen that I remember were really good. I want to go back to the NFL now, because the NFL has actually kind of closed the book, and they're counting their money and looking at the numbers after another successful season across the pond over at Wembley Stadium. They delivered, well, let me ask, did they deliver solid numbers and solid dollars and solid attendance in those three games?
Yes, yes, and yes. Kudos to Mark Waller, the head of NFL International, because everybody was saying, when are you going to get an expansion team in London? And that's not the primary concern right now. It's attendance, awareness, television satisfaction. There were some debates over whether the Yahoo streaming numbers were 3 million, 30 million, 2 million. We're not really equipped to evaluate that at this point because you don't know how long they stay and what they're willing to do. But it is important to know that at the end of this year, we understand the validity of streaming a game. You'll see more of that. You'll also see an activation plan coming out really soon for Germany. In the next year, you'll also look at Mexico. You may see some things in Brazil. And most important, the NFL International Committee and the full ownership has given NFL International a green light to have games and pursue things in all of these countries, at least through 2016, and 2026 for more games beyond that. So they have budgets for next year, and they've got a mandate for the next decade.
The professor, Rick Horro, joins us on Speaking of Sports every week to talk about the deal-making and the business, the dollars of sports. Now we've got a new partnership in college basketball. I'm sorry, about college football has partnered up. I mean, it's peaking. We're getting down to the end here. Then there's the big wait for the bowl games. But there's been a pretty good partnership come together here that you want to tell us about, right?
Yeah, Nissan's going to school. So it's not just football. As we said, it's basketball. A deal with Learfield and others to deal with all of the Power 5 conferences, 64 of the 65. Nissan, the official car, Nissan College 100. The schools are the big brand schools, Alabama, Duke, UCLA, Kansas, UNC, Harvard, Stanford, and others. It cuts across all of the Power 5s, up to $400,000 per school spread out over time. Every school can use the money, but it's really important for the smaller sports, the Title IX sports, and activation, scholarships, et cetera. So it's a big deal for Nissan and clearly a big deal for college sports.
Well, let me squeeze one more thing in here because you know how I love the PGA Tour. They just signed a lucrative deal. Speaking of title sponsorships, we know that Jordan Spieth has climbed back to the top of the world in the golf world. But tell us about this latest deal that the PGA Tour has made.
Well, again, you know, as Jordan Spieth is happy with his lofty position, Lagardère representing them and him and Rory and Jason Day fighting. How about it's all about chickens? 9 million chickens. We're going to get to the punchline in a second before we run out of time. Sanderson Farms, Jackson, Mississippi, tournament, multi-year deal with the PGA Tour. They are a major sponsor, have been. They've renewed. So how do 9 million chickens a week that they deal with, slice and dice, I guess you should say that, which is better than turkey at Thanksgiving, and sell it. That's the revenue they use. This is another company that believes the PGA Tour is very important for their platform. It's good for golf. It's good for Sanderson. Maybe not so good for the chickens.
You're waiting for a punchline. You're waiting for a joke. I'm not going to go there because I don't want to lay an egg. Oh, and I did it anyway.
Oh, yeah, you are. Oh, Mike.
Set you up for that one. The business of sports with the professor, Rick Horro. Thanks very much, my friend.
Happy Thanksgiving. See you next week.
And to you, sir. Thanks very much. There is the business of sports. You want deal making? Check out Horro Sports on Twitter. All right. Coming up next, how about the inside of the NBA? An insider for you next on NBC Sports Radio.
You're listening to NBC Sports Radio. Weekends. This is Speaking of Sports with Jim Daniels on NBC Sports Radio, where every day is game day. And now, it's Jim Daniels.
Thanks for being a part of our day. We appreciate it. NBC Sports Radio, NBCSportsRadio.com. This is Speaking of Sports. I'm Jim Daniels. Here every Sunday, taking a slightly different look at the sports world. Going to bring in Andrew Monaco from the Spurs next to take an early checkup on the National Basketball Association. Andrew has been a studio host and sideline reporter, as well as done play-by-play for the Spurs for the past 13 years. And now to get a good up-close view of this early season, we bring Andrew into the studio. Andrew, thanks for being with us this morning.
Good morning, Jim.
Great to have you with us again. Andrew, is the season's just begun here with just, a dozen or so games. The Spurs suffering a shocker last night. But you know the Spurs, their opponents, and this crazy thought. It's a crazy question I'm going right out of the gate with, but because you know the Spurs, you know the opponents, the superstars, the coaches, the demand on everyone to conquer the regular season. You've got to do that. And then you've watched up close and personal to see what it takes to win in the postseason. Do you think, with all that experience of yours and the talent on the San Antonio Spurs, that you, Andrew Monaco, could coach the team to an NBA victory?
Yeah, because I would stay out of the way and let Manu or Timmy take over, and I think we would be in good hands. Jim, I've always joked about this. It's what I call the huddle after the huddle, or even the huddle before the huddle. When the players come off the floor, you will see Tim with somebody, usually side by side, or Manu. Then they sit on the bench, and they talk amongst themselves. That five on the bench, then the coaches come over. And if Tim has control of that huddle or Manu, you'll actually see Pop and his assistants wait and let them talk that over. Or if Pop has that huddle, then when they come back on the floor, those five coming back on the floor, then there's that conversation of what we're going to run or where we need to be on defense. I know I bring up basketball IQ an awful lot, but when you have players that have not just the talent and the competitiveness, but that IQ and knowing the game, yeah, I think I'd be in some good hands. I can say this. I don't think I'd get fired after 11 games. I'm pretty secure about that if I have those Spurs on my side.
Ow, there's a shot right there, Andrew Monaco. We'll get back to your neighbors in just a second, but let's begin a normal line of questioning for the witness now. We'll start in the East. Phil Jackson has gone from doddering old guy to draft day genius. I don't think I'm overstating it when I say that Kristaps Porzingis might overtake Carmelo Anthony as favorite Nick by the end of the season. I mean, this guy, he put up 29 the other night. I think he could be Rookie of the Year.
He could, and you know what? We got a chance to see him early in this season, and he looks like he belongs. And I think that's the first step for any rookie. Do they belong in the NBA? Because it's a tough adjustment when you're coming from overseas to play on the NBA. But they're playing together. He's doing a lot of – he's another one. You can see that he's got some basketball IQ as well. It's good to have that kind of excitement as well for the Knicks. They need to be relevant in the NBA, and they're past that already. They weren't relevant in the past, Jim, and that's the worst thing you can be in the team, in the league, or anywhere. You want to be really, really good. You don't want to be bad. You always want to be relevant. And I think Porzingis, he shows a rebounding ability. He shows that outside shooting ability and inside. Yeah. He's not afraid to mix it up, get an offensive rebound or rebound in there. The Knicks knew what they were doing, and they got a really nice piece for that team.
Indeed, they did. Andrew Monaco's our guest from the San Antonio Spurs, 13 years in the sideline in the studio for them. After the Cavs dropped one of the Pistons the other night, LeBron said that the Cavs are playing, quote, too nice, and was calling his team out. For some reporters and such, they're saying that, you know, maybe he's, you know, first of all, I don't know that the too nice thing is an accurate description, but the fact that reporters and people are saying that he's hitting the panic button too soon, I mean, they can't play soft until Kyrie Irving comes back, can they?
Jim, you know what he's doing? I'm going to use a spur line, and LeBron is using it. You don't skip steps. That's the biggest key. You can't skip steps on that basketball floor because then you fall into bad habits. And that's what I think LeBron is telling his teammates. And no, you know what? There isn't a panic button here because there's the expectations of this team, and they've got to perform every single night. They're going to take everybody's best shot. But if you're going to expect to win by not doing the things that you need to do, you know, then get used to the losses. I think it's leadership by LeBron right there. He should be the one who's allowed to call out his teammates because we know he doesn't take nights off. But to me, it's the line of let's not skip steps. Let's not forget what we're doing. We want to be consistent. We want to be consistently good. people can think it's a panic button. Oh, it's early in the season. But if you don't fix those mistakes now, they're going to come back and get you later on in the season.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Andrew, let's get back to your neighbors now to the east. They made a pretty surprising, shocking move this past week. The Houston Rockets fire head coach Kevin McHale after just 11 games, which is just crazy considering the cards that he was dealt by GM Daryl Morey and the play that he was getting out of his pseudo-superstars, Harden and Howard. I mean, how do you go from coach of the year finalist to showing the door in about 6 months?
Let me put it this way. How do you go from defensive player of the year to non-factor to MVP candidate who's a non-factor? The onus needs to be on the players, not on Kevin McHale. So he became an idiot in 11 games after taking this team to the Western Conference Finals. They're not getting any kind of play. Here's the other thing, though, Jim. I use the word expectations for the Cavaliers. The expectations changed for the Houston Rockets. They won the division last year. They got to the Western Conference Finals. In sports, now do it again. But it's different with a target on your back. It's very different. Do they have the kind of makeup? And I love the way you said pseudo superstars. Do you have the makeup to be on that level year after year after year? They talk a good game, but the execution wasn't there. Giving up too many points on defense. But, Jim, dirty little secret, they were never a good defensive team in the past.
That's right.
They were able to outscore teams and advance in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Look, Kevin McHale took the fall. I feel sorry for him. I know Greg Popovich addressed it. He said, look, that's the league that we're in. I think Pop used the word bromide. That's the bromide that, you know, it's you get hired to get fired. Yeah. But to think that it's McHale's fault, is that going to be the shakeup that Houston needs? It's a shame that Kevin is the one who has to fall on that sword. And I know that the Rockets and other coaches think very highly of J.B. Bickerstaff. Will his players give him the respect? We'll see, because that's going to be a test for him.
Yeah, and initially I think so, but at the end of the day, I don't expect to see the Rockets in the Western Conference Final. I think they take a step backwards after this really awkward move. All right, from distasteful to unbelievable, the Golden State Warriors have everyone's attention as they begin defense of their NBA championship and now stomping their way to an NBA record for the greatest start in league history. These guys have actually put a chip on their shoulder to use as motivation, disrespected by the media and doubters around the league. Steph Curry is off the chart with his play. Do you agree with me that the Warriors are a better team now than they were last season?
Absolutely. Yes, I do. And again, certain players, right? Weren't we just talking about certain players? Some relish getting to that next level, and then what's next? Can I get even better? We should have seen that with someone like a Steph Curry. But I think there's also the confidence of his teammates as well. And you know what? If that's what it takes for them to come together, I think a lot of people know how good they are, but they are definitely turning heads because this isn't 12 wins against 12 bad teams. They're doing it against Western Conference teams that have been in the playoffs. They're doing it playing that Golden State style. Yeah, I do think they are. I think they realize how good they are. And Jim, I think last year that hit them during the season that they knew they had something special, obviously in the postseason, because they faced a little adversity in the postseason and got past it. And then I think this team has an identity. I think they have a confidence with one another that because they're doing this all together, yeah, I think they are better than they were last year.
Yep. Okay, now finally to wrap things up, your San Antonio Spurs. You're in first place in the division. You land a huge free agent during the offseason in LaMarcus Aldridge to go with one of the league's true MVP candidates in Kawhi Leonard, Duncan, Parker, Manu, everything's still in place. Green, D out, Mills. You got better in the offseason, too, and I'd say that there's a good chance that you're on a collision course with the Golden State Warriors. What's it going to take for this team, this Spurs team, to get to the Western Conference Final and a chance at another world title for that group?
I really think it's going to be the consistency. This Jim, it's going to be funny, but the first five is still learning how to play with one another. By adding the skills that Kawhi Leonard has, and what I talked about previously, he's not the same guy either from when he came into the league. He has added so much in this fifth season for him. And LaMarcus Aldridge, it's different than in the past. So you have an Aldridge who has to learn the Spurs way, but conversely, the Spurs have to learn LaMarcus Aldridge also. This is a two-way street. Mm-hmm. I think another new Spur really put it a really good way, though. David West, he said, it's basketball. We're going to figure this out. But you need the repetition, and you need the time together on the floor. You brought up Manu Ginobili, who's playing like he's turned back the clock. That second unit of the Spurs, I think, has always put pressure on other teams and continues to do so. Manu is always going to get that clutch time. Patty Mills is healthy, and that is a huge difference for the Spurs, offensively and defensively. But Boris Diaw continues to be such a factor. And David West has fit in with that second team very well. Now, who rounds that out? It can be a Kyle Anderson, a younger player. We will see probably Ray McCallum a little bit later. Or you can keep another starter. But I've always thought that second unit, because they've played together more, I think they're a little more advanced. That first five is going to have to adjust to one another. Mm-hmm. I think they will figure that out. The second unit's been terrific. What's a little bit scary for the rest of the league, the Spurs defense is way farther along at this time of the year, Jim, than it's been in years past. Sometimes they've used the first 82 games to get that defense going, but from day one of training camp, they put a little focus on that. Their defense is really good. They can win a number of different ways. You want to go half court? They can defend you in the half court, and they'll play half court themselves. But they'll also get out and run when they get an opportunity. I think that defense being the foundation for them is what may be a little bit different in the past. The offense will come, but I think they can rely on that defense and go back to the old Spurs mantra of in the mid-2000s, stops on demand. I think it's closer to that this year than it's been in the past. The offense will come once that starting five learns where everybody wants the basketball, how to get it to him. That's going to come. Second unit, keep putting pressure on. But I think they can rely on their defense more than they have in the past.
Yeah, you know what? And I think David West is going to be great in the locker room as well as on that second unit for them. As always, Andrew Monaco breaking it down the entire NBA for us. Andrew, great to talk to you. We'll have you back again soon on NBC Sports Radio.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Thank you.
Frequently during the season, I think we talked to that, because you want to talk about an insider, boy, that's Andrew. All right, coming up next, actually, it's the death of a great baseball myth. We'll share that with you next. NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. That's what we do. Bring it to you. NBC Sports Radio, NBCSportsRadio.com. Let's do style. Home Depot has everything you need to decorate your home for the holidays. For less, 'tis the season for holiday trimmings. Deck your halls with the Home Depot's wide variety of ornaments, wreaths, garlands, and fresh cut, as well as artificial trees, and get free shipping on Christmas decorations and holiday decor. Visit homedepot.com/holiday for more details. The Home Depot, more saving, more doing. Pete Fox in the update studio. We're doing a little wrap-up mop-up here of speaking of sports, and I got a couple of, I think, what'll be fun things here. Number one is the death of a myth. You've heard the story. We've all heard the story for years about Derek Jeter, New York's most eligible bachelor, and how, he played the field quite a bit in his day. And, well, there were a couple of rumors. One is that, like, any girl that got all the way to Derek's pad had to surrender their cell phone. No pictures, no video, none of that. But then there was also the rumor that they would leave with a gift basket.
Right, yeah.
Joe Buck had the opportunity to corner Derek on this a couple of days ago and ask him about it. Derek gives it up and says, listen, not only is it not true, but it got so ridiculous that it said that what I was giving them was a bag of Derek Jeter memorabilia. Here you go. Here's a baseball card. Here's some autograph ball. Yeah, okay.
Come on.
Really?
That's not real?
Why did we have to kill that one? That was such a great rumor. A great
myth.
And
my favorite one was that one girl got a couple of baskets. So he forgot, and he gave her two baskets.
Gave her more than one.
That
what do you suppose?
Fake.
What's going to be in the Pete Fox gift basket? What are you going to send them on their way with?
Like maybe cigars and bourbon.
I think that's what Bill Clinton probably would have done. How about this? Let's talk about this very quickly. There is a story. Actually, you could start with Molly Knight, who put her book out about the Dodgers just a few months ago, The Best Team Money Can Buy. The latest rumor coming out of Los Angeles comes from Andy Van Slyke. And his son basically saying that Clayton Kershaw went to Dodger management and said, it's Puig or me. Get rid of this guy. You and I have been around this team. I have seen plenty of people roll their eyes, and I can even say plenty of staffers that have had it up to here, and I'm pointing at my chin with this guy. What are the chances that Yasiel Puig is still a Dodger by the start of the season next year?
I'd say they're fair at best. You know, this is a tough situation for the Dodgers because he's clearly got talent. Mm-hmm. But if he's a guy that upsets the clubhouse, then, you know, they might be able to get something for him. But you would hate to see them move him and then him turn into a superstar. And, you know, just one of those situations where you're constantly being reminded of the fact that he was a Dodger and is no longer a Dodger and is hitting home runs for somebody else. So, we've all heard it time and time again. I've never actually witnessed it. When you're there in the clubhouse and you're covering the team, he is running around and being crazy, but it seems like everyone is in on the fun with him. So I was surprised to hear all of that.
Pete, as usual, thanks very much for your participation in the show. Love having you a part of Speaking of Sports. Really do. Thank you so much, Pete. All right, that's going to do it for Speaking of Sports this morning. Coop is next. You stay right where you're at. It's NBC Sports Radio and NBC Sports Radio's mobile app.